represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. My name is Mark AmTower. My guest is Karen Evans, former OMB eGov guru and currently the National Director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
This is a very cool topic today. It is the Cybersecurity Month, October, and your new gig with the National Director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge is something we're going to get into, but I would like to start off with not only a little bit of Karen's history, but a little bit of history about cybersecurity in the government going back to prior to when we met, which is only like 10 years ago.
So how far do you want to go back? Because cybersecurity has been a passion of mine ever since from the beginning in doing systems development, but actually it became to the forefront because my team was the team that got hacked at the U.S. Department of Justice website.
Well,
let's start there.
When was this?
That was in, I'll never forget, August of 1996.
Oh, heck, that's recent.
That's recent. But what is interesting is that the lessons learned from that are still relevant today. A lot of the things that led to that hacking incident are still a lot of the things that are relevant today that get exploited today. And so even though it's that far back, there are still a lot of those lessons from then that are applicable today.
So August 96, but let's go back. We were talking before the show. Back National Bureau of Standards days, way back when the 15 feet of cable connected the first two computers, NBS, now NIST, started the Computer Security Lab with Jim Burrows, Lynn McNulty, and a bunch of other really talented folks. And that evolved into a lot of special interest groups that are, some of which are still around under different umbrellas. Let's talk a little bit about how that all came about.
Well, that group evolved, and a lot of what Commerce had to do back then was as a result of the Computer Security Act passing. And a lot of the types of things that we were supposed to put in place with the guidance that came from the Office of Management and Budget, from the experts out at Commerce, were things that we were supposed to be doing all along in computer security. We may have changed it, and if you go back and look at some of the definitions that were in that original piece of legislation, it's kind of like what goes around comes around. Technology is such a evolution, revolution, whatever you want to talk about. You know, old fashions come back into style again, just like leggings. They talk about, if you remember leggings the first go around, you shouldn't be wearing them this time. And so they do say that in the fashion world. So, but this is, it's very similar. A lot of the definitions, a lot of the problems that they were trying to solve back then with the passage of that act are the same types of problems that we're facing now. The difference is at the speed and the volume that agencies are faced with and private industry is faced with in trying to deal with those services. But those groups are still there. Their jobs have evolved because the technology has evolved. I think we were talking about the one group. I never say it right.
FISEA?
FISEA, right.
The Federal Information Systems Security Educators Association.
Yes.
Great people.
And they just celebrated a big anniversary, and I'm sure they're going to be doing a big celebration this month as well in the Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
They do cool cool posters, too.
Well, and they hold several workshops throughout the year, and they're at a level which is what I would call the practitioner level, the boots on the ground level, trying to bring those folks together to really share best practices, lessons learned, practical types of things that can be implemented and can be done at the agency level when the big policymakers are still trying to figure out different things, or while they're trying to figure out what the next piece of legislation should be. These are the guys that are sharing a lot of the practical lessons at the GS 13, 14 level so that they can get their jobs done.
Mm-hmm. They're really desktop level folks.
They are. They are very dedicated. They've been around, I want to say, over 25 years.
I think last year was the 22nd anniversary of the show. And that's just the conference. So the group itself, I think, may be at the silver anniversary.
It's pretty
close.
We'll
have to call Mark and find out.
We need to call him and find out, because it's pretty close. Because I know the show and stuff like that that they do. They do a lot of outreach, and it is really very well received. And they are hooking up now and making sure that they're part of the efforts that are going on at the Federal CIO Council level as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that was sort of born out of the NBS NIST computer security group. The other one that we were talking about was the PKI, and both of them are rolled up into another activity you were discussing.
Well, and this was covered, there was a government-wide initiative, e-authentication, that was really looked at during the Bush administration as critical for the services as you moved them and made them e-government types of services, bringing them online, of making sure that people are who they are when they're applying for the services. So all these existing working groups out there were really looked at. Carol Bales is the program manager over at the Office of Management and Budget still. She led the effort for HSPD 12, Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12, which is your cards. And at DOD, it's the CAC card. But what she really did was take a look at what was working well in all of these groups and incorporate them all up together. And so there's an identity management website that GSA manages that is out there that has, for example, all the certified products and services that are on schedule for HSPD 12 implementation. Everything that's happening in biometrics, because there's actually a government-wide biometrics working group out there. Things that are happening from the Federal CIO Council dealing with identity management. So it's out there. I really believe the name of the website is idmanagement.gov. And all of the working groups publish their information out there. So as a vendor or a service provider or a person who wants to participate in this space and provide services for the federal government, that should be your number one spot to go to.
Cool. over the years, since FASEA's 22nd, I'm pretty sure it was 22nd conference last year, we have the Federal Information Assurance Conference, we have the Federal Information Security Conference, we have a variety of events that have been going on for a while now. Give us a sense of the not only the importance but the urgency around cyber.
So all of those are out there, and so cybersecurity has come to the forefront. But I think one of the challenges and what these conferences are attempting to do is there's a lot of different flavors to that, and what does cybersecurity really mean? And this is the same thing. Is it cybersecurity? Is it information security? Is it information assurance? Is it security awareness? So this is a lot of what people are trying to answer and go forward on this. And so I would say it's probably all of those things, but what it really comes down to is risk management and really understanding the risk associated with the services you're providing, and then how do you protect that? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a huge concept, and you don't want it to be something that's just like the secretary of the department pushes it over on the chief information security officer. That really is something that, gosh, I want to do more and more things out using social network collaboration, all of these different things. Well, how do I manage that? That's the risk profile for the department, and then you build the services out. That is part of cybersecurity as well. Everybody gets caught up in the espionage piece, I'm going to do the identity theft part, the law enforcement part. Those things are all really important too, but the major bulk of the work in this area is being done by the network administrators by a lot of boots on the ground, making sure that those types of things are being looked at and that people understand the information that's coming and going in between those firewalls and those services and those things. And that's a lot of work.
It's a tremendous amount, and thinking about it makes my head hurt. My guest today is Karen Evans, National Director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a paper that Karen co-authored on getting people involved in this and the dearth of people currently in the pipeline. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. For example, if you have a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you're going to end up paying over $400,000 after interest. That's almost $250,000 that you could be putting into your pocket instead of the bank's. I want to send you a powerful free CD to show you how. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. That's right, no credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. It's easy. It works.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
Stop getting robbed of your money and your future. Call now and I'll rush you a free CD today. Call 1-800-500-2884. For your free CD, call 1-800-500-2884. 1-800-500-2884.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology, at Kaiser Permanente, we've found some better uses, like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments, not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the Internet was intended? Maybe, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
What led to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's decision to release 75,000 classified documents obtained from a U.S. Army private? A former group spokesman who quit the organization said it was because they had become consumed by confronting the Pentagon. Daniel Domscheit-Berg, a German, said he left the organization because of Assange's management style. He told Der Spiegel, Assange was obsessed with attacking the U.S. government. I'm J.J. Green.
When you think of forensics, a popular TV show with crime scene investigators probably comes to mind. But have you ever thought about forensics at the 30,000-foot level? Literally. AirInc has. AirInc and their partners help oversee the airspace above the nation's capital and have the ability to recreate virtually any situation to indisputably determine the facts, marrying everything from voice recordings to video to GPS. Log on to ARINC.com. to learn more.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is the lovely, talented, and oh so bright Karen Evans, who is the National Director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge. Karen, you've got a paper coming out you co-authored, I believe, through the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Tell us about this, please.
Yes, I'm very excited about that paper. My co-author was Frank Reeder. And
oh,
also,
yeah.
Yes, you know Frank.
Yeah.
So we were working on a subcommittee, subgroup off of the Commission for Cybersecurity for the 44th Presidency under Jim Lewis's direction. And as a commissioner, one of the things that the Hill asked us to look at, asked Jim to look at in particular, was workforce issues associated with cybersecurity. So this paper is a result of that analysis that the subcommittee did, and Frank and I put together the paper. The pre-publication paper is available now on the CS is.is.org website as a pre-publication. And it really, the title of the paper is A Human Capital Crisis in Cybersecurity. And the subtitle of that is Technical Skills Matter. And that's really key, because one of the big things when we were looking at this is, it's one thing to say, and I'm sure you've seen this and heard this a lot now on TV, this is a big space that everyone's jumping into, cybersecurity, and it's getting funded. And industry is paying for this. Everyone is paying for this.
It's been warm forever. That's why I wanted to do the history.
But it is really hot. It's really hot. And it's being funded. And, you know, from a budget experience toward the end of the Bush administration, we actually did a budget amendment to fund this when it went forward as the Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative. That's huge for OMB to do a budget amendment to go forward like that. So this is a big deal. But one of the things then is you want to make sure that you get your money's worth of what you're spending in this area.
Well, you've been pretty good at that for a while.
Well, so I this is a passion of mine, obviously, that if you come out and say that you're a cybersecurity professional, that has meaning. And what does that really mean? For example, many colleges are saying now, okay, come to our school because we're giving a degree in cybersecurity or one in homeland security. So you want to know, what does that really mean? And am I going to be able to turn that into a job? Because again, there's a big need for people with skills in this area. So when the first part of this report talks about the need, several professionals in this area, recognized professionals in this area, have estimated the need for 10 to maybe 30,000 people are needed in the cybersecurity professional area.
And then, just in government or across?
Well, the focus of this paper was federal government and critical infrastructure. So when you start really taking a look at this, and if you're a company that provides this service to the federal government, well, this is going to cover you, because a lot of the things, a lot of the services, a lot that's done in this area is contracted out. So there are several recommendations that are made in the paper. It talks specifically about leveraging procurement power that the federal government has to ensure that several of these types of cybersecurity configurations, those types of things, are built into the contracts going forward. And it specifically talks about a modification that was done in the FAR to deal with standard configurations that are developed by NIST. So we're going full circle back to the group that you were talking about back in the 80s that has now evolved. And so the
And still very important.
Very engaged in this. Well, they produce checklists and they produce standard configurations and they work directly with the NSA.
You get the blue newsletter?
No, I don't. I need to get the blue newsletter.
It comes out in email. I'm still, you know, get the hard copy.
Oh, well, I go to the website and check out everything, and I subscribe to several things out there, because they publish a lot, which really affects many things in this area, and so it takes all of that into consideration. And so think about it. If you need 10 to 30,000 professionals in this area, where are you going to get them from?
Qualified.
Yeah, so the other piece that this really talks a lot about is following the example of the medical profession, where there's a certain part of your education where you actually spend it in the classroom, and then there's a certain part of your education where you're spending it in a lab. And then when you graduate, you get tested in both aspects. So there is a case study in the report that we document between State Department and Commerce Department, and they had the same types of certifications. They had the same types of tools, but their response to the same incident were very different. And so what it shows is that applied knowledge in an environment, that applied skill set, is very important to how you respond to a cybersecurity incident.
Okay. Now, there's parts of this report that go probably deeper into the certification side. So when I see business cards, especially when I go to Maryland marketing meetings, which is for BD people dealing with various aspects of doing business with Ford Mead, we'll leave it at that. The acronyms behind these people's names, often, you know, there's like 10 or 15 of them sometimes.
There are a lot.
And there's a ton. But they're all certification
Yes.
Thing. So, and some of these certifications have been around for a long time. And let's talk a bit about the certification process and what it has meant and maybe the directions that it could go.
So right now, the certification process is all what human capital, human resources, CHECOs rely on, because that's what's out there.
Right.
And so these are people that have gone through a process. They've learned what the policies are. They've learned cybersecurity through different aspects, whether it's school or whatever. And they take a certification test. And so that's where a lot of those letters come from. And that right now is what is used to make the differentiation between a person who has it versus a person who doesn't have it. Those of us who have grown up in this area would argue this is the same thing with project management. And when I was in charge of the Federal CIO Council, everybody wanted us to say, oh, you have to be PMP certified. And there was a group of us that said, look, you can have that certification, but there's a practical application of this to really demonstrate that now I've applied that at multiple levels and I can really manage a program or I can really manage a project. So it's a combination, and the report is really advocating that certifications move up to the next level and evolve so that there is hands-on talent demonstration as well. So if you say that you're a network forensics person, that you answer a series of questions, but that you also then demonstrate the capability to really do the analysis that
right.
a person does. And so that's going to take some time to evolve to, because you're going to have to agree on what is that, what does it look like, how that should evolve, how you would demonstrate that, how you would then test against that.
Mm-hmm.
There are some examples, there are some things that happen over in the UK that they're doing that now, and so there is a recommendation in this report to do a pilot test to see if you can take some of those models and bring them in here and run a pilot here in the United States where you can demonstrate that. And then based on those results, we're hoping that from that perspective, and there's a group that, you know, I would recommend that people go out and take a look at that, because they're going to run a pilot. It's called the National Board of Information Security Examiners, NBISE.org.
Mm-hmm.
And they are getting ready to run a pilot, taking a lot of that information. And Mike Asante is the CEO of that group. And he's going to test it out to make sure that the book learning and the practical hands-on experience can really be tested and certified.
Cool. Now, on these certifications, are these the types of certifications, like with accounting, you have to take X number of CEUs a year or every other year to maintain?
And that's what several of them do, which is great.
Mm.
So that you have the continuing education, and you want to keep that because, as you know, this is an evolving field.
God, is it evolving?
It's really. And
we heard the same news. You know, 20 years ago, there were 3 or 4 malwares registered a month.
Right.
Now it's how many? 200?
I've heard 250,000 a day.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Ow.
That's a lot.
I hate when that happens.
And then it's information overload, right? So you have to separate out based on risk the noise going through this, and you have to have people that are skilled to be able to do it. And so when you take a look at this and you take a look at how this is going to go, it's the threat vectors that are going to change, which means that you're going to have to constantly be trained on what the new threat vectors are so that you can apply the skills and the knowledge that you have against that. And you know, when it was 3 or 4 a day to now it's 250,000, you're going to have to be processing information a lot, understanding where it's coming from, how those threat vectors affect your enterprise, and then be able to come up with solutions. That's 24/7, 365 days a year.
It's the bad guys never sleep.
No, they don't.
And they have trade shows, DEF CON.
Yeah, that's that is an amazing thing. You know, they have some contests when you go out to that too, called Spot the Fed. They've been around forever. Those conferences have been around for a long time. But again, the evolution of those, what the information that they share at those, it's very scary. Like this past year, they were sharing how to break into ATM machines and things like that. And you know, how much of that do you share? If you give the companies the opportunity to fix it in and they don't, then where do the liabilities stop and those types of things? So maybe now that they've shared that information out in a public forum, the companies are going to fix the vulnerabilities associated with it.
One would hope. Your papers focus on the entire human capital process. Is the dearth of people a result of the expansion of this, or like other aspects of the government, just total lack of qualified people anyway?
This is a different area. One of the things that the paper does do is there's a future workforce, a future. There's a chart in here that really maps out what we are recommending that the future look like for cybersecurity. And so, for example, there's a core set of skills that everybody needs to have, but it does take on things like the intelligence area, the military, law enforcement, regular civilian agencies that just have to do defensive, and it takes into consider defensive as well as offensive. And when you start thinking about offensive, you start thinking about DOD, the cyber command, the things that are happening in that area.
Right.
Those all need to be looked at and need to be discussed, because in this space, in this domain of cyberspace, what's going to be considered an act of war? That has to be agreed upon and discussed as a nation going forward.
That gets scary.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But the paper does talk a little bit about that and says it recognizes that we need to take that all into consideration, and not just the traditional way. The area that I handled a lot within the civilian agencies was more the defensive posture, defending against threats, having your services up and running, making sure that you can stay viable for the American citizen. We were participating. I had access to a lot of different things, but our focus was keeping services up and running. So this paper does take in that holistic look and say that we really need to take a look at all of those areas.
Cool. My guest today is Karen Evans. Karen is the National Director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge, which we will be discussing in detail when we come back. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Local and state governments are under tremendous pressure to do more for citizens and do it better. How is technology helping local and state governments do just that? How is the state of Illinois using technology to improve human service delivery? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with special guest Ivan Handler, Chief Information Officer of the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight, brought to you by Cisco.
The U.S. keeps up, but it's not necessarily the undisputed leader when it comes to cybersecurity. Here's General Keith Alexander, whose cyber command is just starting operations.
China, Russia, and you can just go around the world and pick most of the modern nations, have capabilities that I think many could argue are near to us and in some areas may exceed our capabilities.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Cyber attacks on the U.S. federal government have increased by 300% in the past 5 years. As defenders of sensitive data, you need to respond quickly to new attack vectors. You need to detect threats instantly. New FISMA reform calls this continuous monitoring. But does continuous monitoring solve your IT security problem? Continuous monitoring without applying intelligence is passive. You're watching the data without knowing which changes or events equal threats. Without intelligence, you get more data, and you don't need more data. Join Tripwire for a complimentary webcast to learn how continuous monitoring through file integrity monitoring helps you to identify vulnerabilities, mitigate threats, and manage your risk. To learn more about how Tripwire can help your agency, visit tripwire.com/gov. That address again is tripwire.com/gov.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is the lovely, talented, and oh-so-bright Karen Evans, who is the National Director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge. How'd you get this gig?
So this is pretty exciting. When I was working on the CSIS report, the workforce report, one of the things that Jim Lewis had announced on the Hill in conjunction with the Hill, and this initiative actually started there, was the U.S. Cyber Challenge. And there is a group. So, for example, there's a competition right now that's run by the Air Force Retired Association called Cyber Patriot. Mm-hmm. DOD has a competition called DC3, which is dealing with forensics, and they were part of the launch. And when they launched this, what they said was they were going to hold summer camps last summer, and that there was going to be an online competition, and that these schools had agreed to hold cyber camps. So Jim Lewis asked me if I would make sure that these camps actually happened. And so the SANS Institute under Alan Powler had given grants to these colleges to get the camps up and running. And so it was, well, what do we do? How do we run the competition? And then what's going to be the curriculum of the camp? And how would we get all of this working? And so they said, hey, why don't you do this for us? And I thought, oh, it sounded really exciting. So they gave me the title National Director. So you give me a title and I'll do anything, right? And they gave me a title.
Again, yeah. We have to talk about this.
And so they gave me the title. But what was really exciting is this is an offshoot of the work, and it really helps try to identify people with talent, with interest. And the way that we did this was we actually ran an online competition that had people self-identify their talents, not at the real high end like the DC3 challenges, because that's very specific problem set that DOD puts out. But this is a general interest capability, and they competed for these slots. And there were three camps that were held last year, this past summer. You competed online, but you physically got invited to the camp.
Oh.
So you actually went to a camp. You went to the college. There was one in California at Cal Poly. We had one in New York, in Brooklyn, at New York.
Was that NYU Poly?
Yes. Yeah, okay. And then we had one in Delaware.
I was wondering why, you know, because when you go to the site, it's uscyberchallenge.org. There's all of these schools here.
Yes.
Which is very cool to see them involved.
And so we started conference calls and we started the planning and having everything work and how we would run the competition. So what ended up happening was we ran a tool called Security Treasure Hunt, and that was in the April time period. So New York and California went for 6 weeks. Delaware was very precise, went for a week, did very targeted outreach, how they were going to do this. And people answered the questions online, and they competed online. And then we got, by state, a list of people that scored at a certain level. They were then sent to the group that was at, for example, let's take California. They were sent there, and then there was a second round of evaluation, like writing an essay. You had to validate. You had to validate that they were actually either a resident of California or attending a school within California. Mm-hmm. And then they were invited to come to the camp. And then the camp was then held in July, and they stayed overnight at the school. We have pictures posted up on the website of the actual camp. There were activities that were held at the camp, like a seminar on ethics, online ethics, job fair. We had a job fair both at New York and at California.
What kind of companies went to the job fair?
Well, now, see, what was really interesting was we had to go out. So if you look at the website, you'll see that we had sponsors there, too. And so these guys at a moment's notice, helped us build out certain types of things. So this is, it was a pilot. So remember, it was a pilot. So right. We're reaching out through your show today to have more people involved in this. Is that we actually had in, on hands, they were trained in class. They went through a series of different types of training. And on Friday, there was an activity called Capture the Flag, which was another competition, and they were divided off into teams. So when you look at these sponsors and you see people like Microsoft and VMware and Cisco, they provided actual hardware and software so that the camp participants could actually have an environment where they were competing. And it was called Capture the Flag, and you actually had to go out and capture different types. Capture a flag. It's literally a flag. And they did things like social engineering, or they were actually breaking into email systems or coming through the firewall. So there was a scenario that was built, and the teams then competed, and the ones who got the most flags won that competition. And so in the case of Delaware, for example, Senator Carper and the governor were there, and they handed out the certificates, and they got to meet the governor. There was a big event that happened. And so there were different things that happened at different camps. And now at the job fair, these sponsors actually got to participate and came to the job fair. So we also had DOD.
So if you want to see the fresh talent, you got to become
right.
a sponsor.
That's right. See, do you like the incentive? Do you like the incentive?
Well, there's a lot of incentive here, and there's a lot of natural companies that should be looking at this.
Well, and the other thing that what we want to do is we want to keep the sense of community going, because the goal of the U.S. Cyber Challenge is to have that talent pool of 10,000 or more individuals that have played a competition. The long-term vision of this is that we would have a scoring system put in place, and the more competitions you play and how you place, the higher your score is going to be, and that different things will then be made available to you. So, for example, next summer we have two companies that are offering paid internships. So these folks will be able to then compete and, based on their point levels, get these paid internships. So when I'm talking to these companies, I'm like, not free internships where you go and get coffee,
right?
But real internships, real work, where they're going to go in and then find out, do I really want to do this type of work? Do I want to be in private industry? Do I want to be in government? So the Federal CIO Council is participating in this.
Cool.
There is also a national initiative that's being led by NIST. It's called NICE, which is the National Information, it stands for National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education. Nice.
Okay. Cool.
And so Ernest McDuffie, who is the lead out of NIST, came out, was part of the panel, and then also participated in the job fair out in California. We had NSA that was both at California and New York. We had local companies at New York. And there were a few that actually took resumes and offered jobs right there on the spot. So the camp participants they were 18 years or older. And we are now starting to reach back into that supply chain even further. And we just launched a high school pilot up in Rhode Island. So we created a training environment for them. So you go out and you take a look at different things, and you can learn about what's happening in cybersecurity. This is network fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you feel that you're ready and the schools are working with the students that'll participate in this, you go register at another website, which is the Common Knowledge Scholarship Foundation. So it's CKSF.org, and you can register for different scholarships out there. We are using that tool, and we used that tool this past summer as well. And they do outreach, we do outreach, and then the kids will then compete for American Express cards, $100 American Express cards. This past summer, when we were doing the online competition for the security treasure hunt, we actually ran one of these competitions on the U.S. Cyber Challenge itself and gave out a $500 scholarship and five $100 American Express cards. We ran it for a week, the challenge round, and then another round, and we had over 2,000 participants in 2 weeks that played the game.
Cool. My guest is Karen Evans. Karen is the National Director of U.S. Cyber Challenge. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the sponsorships available for the U.S. Cyber Challenge. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
HalfPriceDC.com. Half Price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, spas, and more.
This week, buy Half Price gift certificates to Bale Vietnamese Food and Deli in Rockville. Delicious food and great customer service at affordable prices.
Sur La Place in the Palisades area of D.C. This Belgian fine dining gem boasts over 20 types of mussels and a unique beverage list. And McLoone's Pier House, National Harbor's newest waterfront dining destination.
See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Attend the nation's largest intelligence, defense, and homeland security event of the year, USGIF's GEOINT 2010 Symposium, November 1st through 4th in New Orleans. Register now at GEOINT2010.com to exhibit or to hear from the directors of NGA, NRO, DIA, the Director of National Intelligence, and many more. Don't miss GEOINT 2010, November 1st through 4th, to join thousands from government, industry, and academia. Go to GEOINT2010.com today. That's GEOINT2010.com.
Time and money. Midas wants to save you both. Come in for an oil change and we'll rotate your tires and visually check your brakes, all for just $24.99. That's an oil change, tire rotation, and visual brake check for just $24.99. Surprised? Don't be. Helping you save time and money. That's the Midas touch.
Up to 5 quarts conventional oil, taxes and synthetics extra. Shop fees may apply. Most vehicles at participating Midas.
Companies win federal contracts every day. Your business should be one of them. Get the latest on the top federal contracting opportunities for 2011 at Input's FedFocus event. FedFocus is the government contracting community's premier event that showcases the outlook for defense and civilian markets, data center consolidation trends, and more. Join Input on November 4th at the Fairview Park Marriott in Falls Church, Virginia, and lead your business to success. Register at FedFocus2011.input.com or call Input Events at 703-707-3698.
The landscape for selling products to the government is changing. Are you prepared? Join us November 9th for the 7th Annual Summit on Selling Products to the Government. It's a full day of market intelligence, successful tactics for selling products, insight on leveraging the green trend in government procurement, and more from some of the most experienced professionals in the government market. For more information and to register, go to federaldirect.net and click on the big yellow star.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Karen Evans, who's the National Director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge. And let's talk a little bit about the companies that helped you sponsor this past year and what they did along the way. So let's start with our buddies at Cisco.
So Cisco came through with the hardware that we needed. When I talked a little bit about what was happening in the classroom, one of the things was really building out the environment for Capture the Flag. So when you think about that, you're actually hacking a series of systems.
Right.
Well, you can't necessarily do that across the regular public internet because that's then interpreted as real hacking.
Yeah.
Right. So they get caught and they will then get cut off. But what we were doing is running this competition, so we had to create an environment for them to be able to actually do that. So the initial sponsors here really came through on a dime. I mean, Cisco was mailing routers around the country for us. And you know, big shout out to Cisco for the support from the initial concept to this to the actual getting these camps up and running. We had a broken router in New York and they overnighted a router to the New York school up there so that they would have a backup and be able to make sure that they could run the competition. So Cisco did that. Juniper came through and actually gave us cash, which is always wonderful. You need cash.
Cash works.
Cash works. And so they came through and they helped us with that. Logic Security actually is a group out of California that run. There's another competition that happens at the collegiate level, and they developed the Capture the Flag activity that the three camps actually did.
Oh, cool.
And they had the team that evaluated the quality of the work that the teams were doing during the camp and then awarded the winners. So those guys had to do a lot. They were actually at DEFCON at one point, and we had the camp going on in New York, so they had to go over to another room while we were running the competition and actually do that while they were at the conference. So very dedicated folks. VMware came through at the last minute because as they were developing this, they gave us the licenses so that we could actually run the virtual machines and have everything working in this scenario. It was wonderful. The Pink Orange. This one, everybody looks at that and thinks it's a great new software company. And actually, she is out in New York, and her husband was one of the camp participants in New York. So we actually tested everybody and said, who knows what the Pink Orange is? So it is a bridal company out of New York, but she developed our logo. So she developed the U.S. Cyber Challenge logo that's all over everything. Yeah, so it's very cool. Then we have SC Solutions, which is out over here in Reston, and they gave us cash. Again, cash is always good.
Cash is welcome.
And then Quest Communications, holy smokes, those guys were pulling cable. I mean, they put in the connectivity for Delaware and New York and California to make sure that they had the pipes so that they could run the competition. That was pretty exciting. Sands, actually, we talked a little bit about them. This was their idea up front. But the other thing that Sands gave was the curriculum. They developed the curriculum for this, and they also provided all the instructors. So that's huge. That's huge. You know, the Sands instructors are very well respected.
Right.
And they compete to be
the gold standard.
It's the gold standard, and they compete to be SANS instructors. So that's the whole concept of the competition. So they compete to be able to teach. So they actually taught the classes for the students, which was great. And then Microsoft came through, and we actually used their physical test facility out in Irvine, California. They gave us the equipment, and they gave us physical plant so that we could run and have the environment for Capture the Flag. So they came through at a moment's notice as well. So these we would have not been able to pull off the camp without the schools and without these sponsors.
And then let's run briefly through the schools again as well.
So it was in California. It was Cal Poly in Pinoma, California. And in New York, it was New York University Polytech in Brooklyn. And then in Wilmington, Delaware, it's the University of Delaware. And it was also Wilmington University. And so those schools were phenomenal, the teachers that were involved, the instructors that were involved. And also, the last plug was the multi-state ISAC, which is the chief information security officers across the nation. It's run by Will Pelgren, who is now the CEO for the Center for Internet Security, which is a nonprofit. And that's now where the U.S. Cyber Challenge resides as well, is in the Center for Internet Security. But the chief information security officers of each of those states participated in the conference calls as well. So Mark Weatherford from California, who's now here at D.C. We had Elaine Starkey in Delaware, and then Will from New York.
Cool. Very cool. Now, you had the high school challenge.
Yes.
How do schools get involved in this, and when the next round comes up, what do they do?
So we have a lot of schools that are outreaching to us now, colleges that want to be hosts for the camps. And what we're going to be doing is out on the U.S. Cyber Challenge website, we're going to put an application module out there because we need to be able to schedule these, obviously. We ran these sequentially this year. We can't do that next year. And the idea is to really leverage everything that is out there and really have the schools run the camps with the standard curriculum and have access to instructors, because we have people that want to volunteer for instructors. And so we have it's Virginia Tech. Randy Marchaney from Virginia Tech, who is also a SAN instructor, is working with me on getting the instructors in place and how that should work. But we'll have an application module out there shortly so that schools can then apply. We are evolving the high school competition so that after this first round, Rhode Island is a pilot, And the state of Maryland is also going to be a pilot school. And what we're going to do is have an application module for high schools to be able to apply and say that they're interested in running these modules. And the high school competitions are all online right now. So this is kind of building off of the sports model where you have competitions at different levels, and then the camps is when you go off and really learn the hands-on thing, just like football camp where you have the big stars come and they teach you the different things. Well, that's the model that we're trying to really roll out, and it works really well for sports. I mean, everybody really gets into the whole sports thing. I know that model works well. So that's what we're trying to build upon and really leverage here in the U.S. Cyber Challenge.
Well, hopefully this will go a long way to fill up those 10 to 30,000 seats that we need for qualified professionals.
Well,
in that area.
That's the goal.
Karen, thanks so much for sharing this. For all of you companies out there interested in cyber, you can find information on sponsoring this at uscyberchallenge.org, and I strongly suggest you do so before I call you.
That'll be great.
And tell you that you really should get involved. Again, Karen, thanks. Karen is the director, National Director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge, and this is Cyber Month, Cybersecurity Month.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I hope everybody goes out and looks at the website and gets involved.
This is a blast. This is not my day job. On November 9th, you can come and join me and my faculty for the only event that focuses on selling products to the government. You can find information at federaldirect.net, and you can truly believe that you haven't been everywhere until you've been off-center with Amtower.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
What if I said you had the power to speak Chinese or to dream in French? What if you could even read in Italian? You'd be skeptical, right? What if I could prove it to you with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone, one that unlocks your ability to learn any language on Earth? Introducing the all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone, the only language learning program that literally awakens your natural ability. And for the first time ever, they're inviting you to experience their groundbreaking program, absolutely free, with a free demo CD-ROM. Call 1-800-600-6621 and request yours. Developed around the way you naturally think and learn, Rosetta Stone teaches you your new language with the tools you already have. And now you can experience it for free. Awaken your natural language learning ability today with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-600-6621 and request yours. Rosetta Stone, your natural ability awakened. That's 1-800-600-6621.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
What led to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's decision to release 75,000 classified documents obtained from a U.S. Army private? A former group spokesman who quit the organization said it was because they had become consumed by confronting the Pentagon. Daniel Domscheit-Berg, a German, said he left the organization because of Assange's management style. He told Der Spiegel, Assange was obsessed with attacking the U.S. government. I'm J.J. Green.
When you think of forensics, a popular TV show with crime scene investigators probably comes to mind. But have you ever thought about forensics at the 30,000-foot level? Literally. AirInc has. AirInc and their partners help oversee the airspace above the nation's capital and have the ability to recreate virtually any situation to indisputably determine the facts, marrying everything from voice recordings to video to GPS. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Did you know that eating less than 1,000 calories a day can actually make your body gain weight instead of lose it? To lose weight, you have to feed your body right. Hi, I'm Sam Preston from Slender Smoothies. When I looked around for a weight loss solution that would work for me, I couldn't find one that fed my body right. So I decided to create my own. My patented weight loss smoothies are so effective, so powerful, that I'm going to let anyone who calls today try them for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-370-4483. And now I've made Slender Smoothies even better, because if you're one of the first 100 callers, you'll not only receive a 2-week trial, you'll also receive my revolutionary blender bottle absolutely free, plus free shipping and handling. Call 1-800-370-4483. That's 1-800-370-4483.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick.